This is Charlottesville Tomorrow, an advocate for our future today. Charlottesville Tomorrow is a nonpartisan community organization working on land use, transportation, and community design issues. Visit us on the web at seavilletomorrow.org.
On November 3rd, 2009, voters in Charlottesville will go to the polls to elect two members of the city council. This recording is Brian Wheeler's September 1st, 2009 interview with Kristen Zekos, a Democratic candidate in the race. Zekos faces independents Paul Long, Andrew Williams, and Bob Benwick. She is running on the same ticket as Democrat Dave Norris.
Ms. Zekos, thank you for participating in this interview with Charlottesville Tomorrow. The complete audio and written transcript for this interview will be available on the Internet. Information from this interview will be used in the compilation of Charlottesville Tomorrow's nonpartisan voter guide. Charlottesville Tomorrow does not endorse any candidates, and our goal is to provide information to the public so they can make an informed vote on issues related to land use, transportation, and community design. As you are aware, some of the questions you will be asked have been provided in advance. Others have not. All city council candidates will be asked the same questions. Are you ready to start?
Yep. Thanks for having me.
Great. Question number one. Please describe your past experience that qualifies you to be on city council.
Well, my education, I went to Grinnell College in Iowa and worked for a couple of years and then went to graduate school in journalism at Northwestern in Chicago. And I think that that was probably the best combination of education I could have to be a city councilor, a liberal arts education, which prepared me for learning a lot about a variety of things, and then a journalism education, which prepared me for really getting deeply into complicated issues and figuring out how to synthesize them in ways that regular people can understand them and that I can understand them. So that's, you know, I think both are really good things, and as I've kind of come through my life, I certainly wasn't planning to go into politics, but when I started thinking about running for city council, I thought those are very good preparation. Just civically in the community, I've raised my kids here. I have two daughters who are 18 and 19 years old. I've generally found myself getting involved in a lot of groups as they've grown up. I was the president of the Burnley Moran PTO for a while, and I was active in the PTO council. I was on the board of the local NAACP when it was still the Charlottesville NAACP. I'm a second-generation NAACP member. I'm a vestry member at Trinity, which is the leadership board of my church, Trinity Episcopal Church. I was also the volunteer coordinator for the Obama campaign for the last, year and a half before last November, and continue to be one of the local coordinators for Organizing for America.
Question number two. Do you support the formation of a regional transit authority with Albemarle County? And a follow-up question, what are your regional transportation priorities, and how do you recommend we fund them in the absence of new state funding and without the ability to raise a local sales tax?
Well, I certainly think that we need to work closely with the county on transportation issues. We have kind of an urban core of our community that includes a lot of the county, and then we have a more rural ring around it, or kind of a star-shaped urban core, however you want to look at it. And I think that the transportation issues that face the city also face that urban core of the county. On the other hand, I think for a lot of rural residents in the county, they have very different transportation needs, very different needs for public transportation. You know, the idea of a light rail from Crozet to Charlottesville, I think, is something that would interest a lot of people in those areas. But I'm not sure that they would want to continue to fund an urban transportation system. And I would worry if they were combined that there would always be that pressure to not fund it adequately because it doesn't serve the entire region. So I'm not quite to the point of wanting to combine completely, but I think we do need to work closely together because we have a lot of shared needs and a lot of shared resources that we can use. I think that there are some things that the county has done really well in transportation and other things the city has done well, and I think we could learn from each other. As far as priorities, my priorities within the city are to try to reduce the number of cars in the city. Not the number of cars that people own, but the number of cars, although that too, the number of cars that people are driving. I think, you know, a lot of parts of the city have congestion. We have a lot of traffic by residential areas. We have people cutting through neighborhoods. And there are various ways that we can address that, and I think one way is to reduce the number of people driving to do their errands, especially to go to work. And so I'm hoping to help increase and sort of coordinate our system of bike paths. I'd love to see it easier for people to ride their bikes to work without taking their lives into their hands. We have bus lanes that go for a while and then stop, and if you're only halfway to work, you're kind of in danger for a while as you keep going. I'd like to see some off-road bike lanes, bike paths through the city that don't include roads. Some communities have done that on railroad lines. You know, there are various ways that you can do that, and I know those have been explored by various studies, and I'd like to see those kind of revived and talked about. I also am concerned about pedestrian safety because I think, you know, a lot of us would walk if we had sidewalks that were not falling apart. People who are in wheelchairs can't often get places without driving because the sidewalks aren't adequate in certain spots. Many places they are. I have read the city's sidewalk plan, and it is very methodical, but there are still huge gaps, places where the sidewalks are narrow, dangerous, areas especially over around the IGA off Cherry Avenue, where we have lots of people living, lots of children, a school there, and no sidewalks. And so kids are walking in the street, which isn't safe. And then public transportation. I'm supporting an idea or a model of transportation in the city that's a little different than what we have. I think we've done a really good job with our small town bus system. You can get to about two-thirds of the parts of Charlottesville without a car. And that's great. You know, that's lovely. It's not very efficient. We have bus routes where you can get, like from my house downtown, I can get there in about 4 minutes on a bus. It takes about 25 minutes to get back because it's a big loop. And if I miss the bus, it takes an hour and 25 minutes to get back because it only runs every hour. So what I'd like to see is a system of buses that go on major commuter routes, like Cherry Avenue, like Emmett, like maybe even the bypass, where the bus runs every 10 or 15 minutes. So you don't have to know the bus schedule. You could just go out there, you know a bus is coming, you could hop on it. Hopefully there would be park and rides in areas, even in the county, that we could work with them so that people could drive, say, from Lake Monticello, but then park to get into town and know that that bus would be coming often enough that they could use that and get back when they need to get back. And then we would have smaller either buses or vans or even cars in some places that go in the neighborhoods and bring people out to those locations. And that way people would have, you know, people who don't have a car at all could still get where they need to go on that less frequent schedule. Funding. I think there's a larger issue about taxation in the city that I think we need to look at that has to do with state law that isn't something that we can do in the short term, although I do have some ideas in the long term. But I think that one thing I'd really like to see is more of an engagement of our citizenry, having people participate in things. I think if we had people, working on bike paths as volunteers or as interns or as summer programs for youth, that some of those things can be taken out of the public dollar and also build community in ways that I think are very productive. But other than that, I'd say, you know, during this economic time, I think we're seeing shrinking tax dollars everywhere. I don't think that the proper response would be to raise taxes on everyone. I think that we have to remember as public servants that we're not spending our own money. We're spending other people's money, and some people don't have a whole lot extra, and it's a sacrifice for them to pay that. So, you know, I think that for things that serve the community, that's what government is for, is to spend public money and to collect public money to do that. I think we need to be very careful in how we do that, how we raise more.
Question number three. In August 2009, Advocates for a Sustainable Albemarle Population released their first report in their research seeking to identify an optimal sustainable population for the community. Should City Council explore policies that would cap the city's population growth at a number below the potential build-out population? Why or why not?
Well, I have spent quite a lot of time thinking about this, talking to people who are involved in this project, and then talking to folks who aren't involved in the project about it. And I must say that I'm intrigued by the idea. I'm glad that they did the study. I think there's lots of really good information in here. I've read it now. I've gone through it once quickly, and I've with my pink highlighter, and I'm going through it again a little more in detail. The population that they're talking about in this report that they consider to be a build-out population, which they feel is the largest sustainable population for the locality in Charlottesville, is adding about 50% to our population. And we haven't grown significantly in recent years, and I think it would take us a long time to build to 50%. So I don't think this is a short-term issue for the city. On the other hand, I have some philosophical questions about this whole process. I know, the reason I'm delighted about the report is that I think it's really important to understand the impact of population on the ecosystem and on the kind of ecology of a region. But no region stands in a vacuum. We're on one planet, and our planet has population growth. And you can, there are organizations that are, zero population growth organizations and groups like that are working on that. But what this is doing is saying that, yes, there will be more people, but we don't necessarily want them here. And that, to me, brings up some issues that I'm concerned about. I'm a little concerned about if you do put kind of caps on growth, that the only way to do it legally is really by limiting building, by limiting housing, or by driving the price up so much that people can't afford it. And what's happened in certain parts of California where localities have instituted this sort of policy is that the housing costs in those communities has risen astronomically. And you end up with a community in which the wealthy can live comfortably and ecologically, and everybody's happy, and the environment is relatively unscathed, and yet the people who work in the trades, the people who work as teachers, as firefighters, as police, can't afford to live there. And I don't think that that's a sustainable model. And I'd rather figure out ways that we can reduce the ecological impact of each of our residents as much as possible so that we're not talking about keeping people out. We're talking about really, being glad if people live here, because then their ecological footprint will be smaller than if they lived out in the county or out in, Greene County or someplace where they're taking up more room. Because one of the things in this report, it showed that people who live in Charlottesville take up less room. When they live in an urban area, they have less of an environmental impact than if they live in a 3-acre yard in a big house with a driveway and have to drive to work back and forth. So, for the city, what I bring out of this report is that, no, I wouldn't want to limit growth in the city. But I think we do, I value reports like this because then we can see what the impacts, we don't have unintended consequences, and we see what the impact is and can really take that into consideration in planning.
Question number 4. Is neighboring Albemarle County's rate of population growth too much, too little, or just the right amount? And a follow-up, what in your mind are the advantages and disadvantages to population growth in Albemarle and in the operations of the University of Virginia?
Well, I have a real concern about the impact of kind of rampant housing development just outside the city limits. We have a lot of housing that's gone up just south of the city. I live just on the bypass right near Freebridge going east. And every day I look out my window and I see traffic backed up past my house, not able to get across Free Bridge because there are so many people trying to get that way, turning left on 20 and going up to Pantops. And there are thousands of new apartments up at Pantops that I have just been driving around and just astonished at, and also off Avon and off Old Lynchburg Road south of the city and off 5th Street. So I the concern I have about that is not that I think people shouldn't be allowed to live there, but that the county growth has happened without a corresponding infrastructure commitment, either in the county or in the city. I think that we have, I think we need to plan better. And I think studies like this population growth study show the need to do that. If we just develop without control and without a really systematic plan, and I know there were plans to build there, but it still seems that it's ahead of what we can support with our infrastructure. And I'd like to see a little bit of attention paid now to that infrastructure before we keep doing that. And it's not that I think that they shouldn't develop, necessarily, but I think that we really need to pay attention to how we do that so that it keeps a quality of life for the people who get driven by.
And anything on the University of Virginia?
One thing about the University of Virginia, I would encourage them to provide adequate housing for their students, especially undergraduates, on the grounds or near it. Most universities provide for their underclassmen ample, high-rise dorm accommodations. And I know in the city you have to be under 9 feet, 9 stories, but by abdicating that responsibility, I think that UVA has increased the pressure on housing prices on that end of town. They've increased the pressure on nearby neighborhoods, and they've increased the pressure on our city's utilities. I think that students, even freshmen, come in and have to find an apartment. They are increasingly moving out into the neighboring communities, and I don't think that's a real healthy model.
Question number 5. Should the community invest in repairing or enlarging the existing Lower Ragged Mountain Dam, built around 1908, as part of the 50-year community water supply plan? Why or why not?
Well, this is one that I'm frustrating people on every side of this issue because I keep not quite being willing to come up with a definite answer. I had high hopes for the study about dredging. I thought that was not a bad idea, partly to get the cost of dredging, which I think is something that has been argued about, and finding resolution to that would be a positive. But also because I think that there's so much animosity between people who want the reservoir and people who don't, that I really was hoping that this study would at least give figures upon which everyone could agree going forward, and that we could move forward to the next step. The price tag that came with the study bid, I think, is astronomical. And we were talking before about taxes and people's money, and I think that's too much. I think $750,000 is not, we take up most of the savings that we'd get from dredging by paying for the study, and I just don't I think it's kind of, ridiculous. On the other hand, I'm not really for scrapping it. I'm hoping that we can go back to that firm and say, so what can we get for, say, $200,000 like we had originally intended, and try to get some figures that are useful for this discussion out of that. But as far as whether we should or not, I do think we absolutely need to repair the dam. I'm not at all equivocal about that. What the difference, where I'm still kind of waffling is how big the reservoir needs to be. There is some hope that with adequate conservation and with dredging at South Fork, that we don't have to build as much into the surrounding countryside as the plan calls for. I don't know if that's possible or not, and I don't think we really can know until we get this dredging study or some figure that we can all agree on. I think that the whole thing has really shown a problem in the city, I think, and possibly in the county too, although I've not really followed the county process. What seems to happen on a lot of these things is that issues sort of are studied and considered out of the public eye, and I don't think it's intentional. It's not that anybody has hidden them, but I think that people don't pay attention soon enough. And by the time people start paying attention, things are kind of past the point at which you can have a lot of input. And I think that makes people very frustrated and very angry. I think that the Meadow Creek Parkway is a similar situation. And so I'm really committed to improving our record of bringing all stakeholders into the process, not just sort of saying, hey, you can come if you want, but actually going out and bringing them in and talking to people so that we don't constantly run into these situations where we have really important infrastructure issues that we have to deal with. We have to do something, and yet we keep having to stop because people say, wait a minute, I didn't know about it. And I think that's a really slow way to move forward.
And I do want to ask just one follow-up on that. Just to make sure we were clear on the question, the community water supply plan envisions a new dam downstream of the 1908 dam. So this question was more about the existing dam.
Right.
And what I heard you say was that you favored repairing the existing dam.
Well, I think we can't leave it the way it is. So I don't know. I wouldn't say that I am against building a new dam at this point. I think I'm just still trying to figure out what the answer is on that. I think we can't leave it the way it is because it's not sustainable the way it is.
Question number six. If you could focus on one area for improved partnership with Albemarle County during the next 2 years, what area would that be?
One area. Oy, can I have four? I think long-term planning is something that we have done, and it's something that, like I was saying before, I think we need to work on closely and continue to improve the way that we bring people in. I think there's a lot of distrust or miscommunication, and I think sometimes it's one causes the other, both in both directions, between the city and the county. Not so much between the city and county governments, although occasionally there too, but between people in the city who think, oh, the county government doesn't care what happens to us, or the people in the county thinking, oh, the city government doesn't care what happens to us. We really are a community together, and I think that I would really like to see us work together to try to present a united front in some of these things. My other three, which I'm going to just, that was my one, but let me just add three more. I think economic development is huge, and I think that at the federal level, there are going to be tax incentives and various things that will help with economic development around green energy, around green manufacturing. Our mayor just went to Washington, to the White House, to discuss some of these things, and I think the more that we can bring those into this area, I'd love to see them in the city, but I'd also love to see them in the county. I think that we need more work for people who either don't go to college or go into trades. I think we have, great, we have the university and we have lots of professions here, but we also need to make sure that we have adequate employment for people who come through our high school and don't go to college. I'd also like to see us working together on environmental protection and conservation. And there's one other thing I'd like to see. The county and the city work with cities and counties throughout the Commonwealth. There's a thing called the Dillon Rule, which is a state law that says that you can't, this is kind of an oversimplification of it, but that you can't really do anything new under the sun. If you want to do something that's not provided for in the Constitution, you have to go and get permission from the entire General Assembly. So some of the environmental things we've tried to do recently in the city, we've had to get permission from the General Assembly, which wastes their time, wastes our time, it slows down progress. And I would love to see us be able to do, around the state, to pilot innovative projects that are, whether it's economic development or workforce development or environmental protection in new and exciting ways like they do in other states. And we could become a leader in some of those things. And we can't because of the Dillon Rule. So I would love to see us cooperate and work together to try to get that changed. And I think if we do that across the state, that we can get it changed, because almost every locality government hates it.
Question number seven. What are your priorities for economic development and workforce development in Charlottesville?
Well, as I mentioned, green jobs as part of the federal and state initiatives for economic development through green technology and manufacturing. I want to make sure that as we work to get jobs in the community, that they are jobs that provide a living wage. I think tourism is wonderful, and I love living in a place that people want to come and visit, but tourism itself often generates only jobs that are relatively low wage, waitresses, service jobs, hotel maids, people who work in those sorts of industries. And while those are fine, they don't pay very much, and I think they're not really what we're looking for economic development for jobs. So I'd like to see light industry. I'd like to see a concentration on locally owned businesses. I'm not really for pulling in things like chain stores or franchises, I think, are locally owned of things. But I think that we really need to sustain our local businesses. And I think that includes helping local businesses that exist, not just new ones, but actually figuring out ways that we can, make this a good place to do business for local businesses. Because a dollar spent in a locally owned business stays in the community a lot longer than a dollar spent on a national chain or an international chain. I also think that around a lot of universities, there are spin-off industries around some of the intellectual work that goes on at the university, research and development. And there's not as much of that here as I'd like to see. There are ways that the university can help build that. There are ways that the city can help do that, and the county. And I'd like to see us work harder to try to do that, because we have a great resource in the university and a lot of great minds thinking great thoughts, and I'd like to kind of incorporate that into our economy. And I also I'm delighted with the internship program that the city has now for youth. And I know that the city council has committed to continuing to expand that, and I fully support that. I'd also like to see a similar internship program for people who may not be youth but don't have a work history, people who've not worked before but who might, with that sort of mentoring, might be able to get full-time employment. And I think that those are some ways that we can help get some work done that we need in the city, as well as developing good work skills for people who need jobs.
Question number 8. What would you like to see happen to the old Martha Jefferson Hospital site in Charlottesville?
Well, I understand that there is, and I don't know a whole lot about this, which is really kind of sad because I live right near the neighborhood of Martha Jefferson Hospital. But I understand that there is a developer involved who is looking at mixed-use development, and presumably there will be some community involvement in that. And that's my first hope, is that there will be community involvement in that. It's a well-organized neighborhood, and I think that's an important thing. But it's not just the impact on the neighborhood. I think we also have the impact on the city. A lot of people work as nurses, as housekeepers in the hospital, and we need to figure out what's going to happen to them. Are they going to be able to get to work at the new places, or are they going to be able to work in the city and not have to leave? So I'd like to see some attention paid to that workforce. But I would love to see a mixed-use kind of center with maybe groceries and small shops and places where you can go in the neighborhood. I'd like to see a range of income levels for people who live there, a range of affordability in the housing. I think that that's when our communities work best, is when we live together instead of in our own little segregated neighborhoods by income. So that's about as detailed as I think I can go on that.
Question number 9, what is your vision for McIntyre Park?
Actually, it was right there, and I kind of missed it. My vision for McIntyre Park is people using it. I would love to see, one of the things I think about an urban park is that it offers opportunities for kids who don't have big yards, kids who may not have a whole lot of green space in their lives, to have open space, to be able to run and play and be outside and see trees and grass and flowers and maybe even get poison ivy, God forbid. And I think that at this point, our park in some ways does that very well. We have baseball that's there. It's, I think, probably a majority of county residents, but they need parks too. I have no problem with that. And we have the golf course, which is relatively well used. A lot of people play golf there. But there are no bus lines to the county or to the McIntyre Park, and so that limits who can go there. It's in walking distance from the high school, but at this point there isn't much there for high school age kids. I'm really excited about the idea of having the YMCA there. I think that's going to bring people into the park in a way that exposes kids to that sort of space. It takes up very little of it, proportionally, and I think that the payback is great, and so I'm delighted about that. There's been some talk about the botanical gardens. I haven't talked to the folks who are doing that yet, although I am planning to. I don't know how I feel about that. I kind of like raw, untamed space a little bit, but we also have an incredible resource here of trees and things that I'd love to have kids be able to look at and understand in a small space. So I think it's an intriguing idea. I'm not sure that I want a whole lot of public funds tied up into sustaining it long term. I think if it were privately funded, I'd feel a lot better about it. Let's see, my other vision for McIntyre Park. I'd just love to see people in it, to see it a place where you don't have to drive your car to get to it, a place where kids say, hey, meet me at McIntyre Park, after school and, you know, are in that space and using it.
Question number 10. Do you support the three-party agreement reached in 1990 between Albemarle, Charlottesville, and the University of Virginia, which identified a sequence of transportation projects to be completed before the construction of a western bypass of U.S. Route 29?
Well, there's lots of different people characterize the three-party agreement in different ways, and I'm still kind of muddling through that. From what I understand, the widening of 29 from hydraulic up to, I guess, up to the river, has happened once, and there's some talk about widening it again, but that was part of the three-party agreement that's been done. I know that the university was supposed to do their connector to the grounds, and that's been done. The Meadow Creek Parkway is part of this. The county has started. The city has agreed to get theirs done at the same time as the county part, so that's there. The part that hasn't happened is the off-grade interchanges that were agreed to at that point, and I believe that the county has said that they don't plan to do that. So the way I look at it, it seems like there are a couple of things that the county agreed to that they haven't fulfilled, and I know that other things have happened in between, and so I'm not going to say, oh, those bad people, because I don't know what all those interim processes were. But you know, we're getting all that traffic through the city at this point, and I think that we've kind of, you know, I'm not quite sure why the county won't consider or doesn't want to build that western bypass, except that it's politically difficult to get passage through other people's land, and I think people fight back, and I think that sometimes that's what you need political courage for, to do projects that are needed in a community. I don't know that that's one of them, and I haven't read enough of these studies to really come down on that, but I do feel that at this point a lot of that is in the county's lap.
Question number 11. Given the long funding and implementation period for multi-jurisdictional projects like the Meadow Creek Parkway and the Community Water Supply Plan, what are the advantages and disadvantages to the current city council revisiting previous council's decisions regarding such projects?
I think it's never a bad idea to kind of see where you are, if it's really where you want to be going in your life. I mean, this is what I do in my life. You know, every year, just before New Year's, I kind of say, okay, am I living my life the way I want to live it? Am I doing what I think I should be doing with my life? And make minor adjustments to direct myself in the way that I want to go. And I think that as a community, it's important to do that too. On the other hand, I think it's important to just to realize that some things are long-term projects, and if you keep revisiting them, you never get to the long-term. You keep starting over, and I think that that is very unhealthy, and I think that we've done a fair amount of that. It drives me crazy to have decisions that everybody thought were made start over. I think that that's often sour grapes from people who didn't get their way. They just keep pushing and yelling until somebody listens, and then they start over again. Not really a sustainable model. On the other hand, we need to be responsive to people, so we need to listen, but I don't think we need to necessarily start over every time our decisions are disagreed with.
Question number 12. Should Albemarle County officials be able to revisit or renegotiate their past decision on the 1982 revenue sharing agreement with the city of Charlottesville? Why or why not?
Well, this is one of the questions I just got today, so I didn't bring my information, but I have read some stuff about this in the past. My understanding is that the revenue sharing agreement came because the city agreed not to annex certain property in the county back when they could annex property in the county in exchange for this revenue stream that would come from the county, kind of paying them not to annex. And over the last however many years it was since that happened, 1982, that area, which is like right off Hydraulic Road, right? It's just the north end of the city, is incredibly revenue rich for the county. They get an awful lot of property tax. They get a lot of other taxes from that area. There are a lot of businesses there that are very profitable. And from what I understand, if we undid the 82 revenue sharing agreement, I mean, if we really undid it, we would get that land and they would stop paying us and we'd win. You know, it would be to our benefit to end the revenue sharing agreement because, you know, but in a way we can't because we can't, we can no longer annex that. And since we can't annex it, I think it would be mighty unfair of them to take back their part when they can't take back our part. So I think the county has had a great benefit from this revenue sharing agreement. I think they have come out ahead, not that we've come out behind because we agreed to it, but I think that it would be short-sighted of them to take it back at this point.
Question number 13. In June 2006, the city and county signed off on a 50-year water supply plan that includes a new dam at Ragged Mountain Reservoir and a new pipeline connecting it to the South Fork Ravana Reservoir. Do you support this plan? Why or why not?
I support most of the plan, and on some of the plan I'm still up in the air. I do support not fixing the pipeline that comes down from the other, you know, Sugar Hollow. I think that that is clearly done. It would need such repairs and such a long pipeline for relatively little water at great economic or ecological cost. I'm not for undoing that part. So that part of the plan I think is great. I think that the idea of having our primary water source at Ragged Mountain is absolutely critical. It's a natural place for us to have that. It's it makes sense. It's not great. I'm not happy about it. I wish we didn't have to cut down trees. I wish we didn't have to store water. I wish that we could just, you know, catch it from the sky and purify it, and it would be lovely. But I think that we do, and I think that especially, you know, we were talking before about population growth, and I think that the city is not growing at a very great pace. And the county is growing tremendously. So it's mostly the county that needs this water supply, I think more than the city does. And so one concern I have about the water plan is the funding of it and who pays for that, who pays for that increased capacity. I think one reason to have increased capacity is that, you know, we want to be able to draw light industry. We want to be able to draw, you know, things that, you know, even as we're conserving individually water use, we want to be able to have that access in the city for industry. So we may grow some in our need for water. But I just want to make sure that at some point it's not the city who's bearing the brunt of this project, both in the property at Ragged Mountain Reservoir, which is city property, and in ratepayers having to pay for the increase.
Question number 14. What is your top priority for action by City Council if you are elected?
Well, I have two, but they're interrelated, so I'm going to count them as one for purpose of this question. One is civic engagement. As I was working with the Obama campaign, one of the things that excited me about that candidate and about the campaign was the commitment to drawing people in, not just into getting someone elected, but into a long-term participation in the public process, in caring about public issues and getting involved in public issues, in pushing for the change that people said that they wanted. And I think that over the course of history, that's when we've achieved the sorts of things that we wanted to achieve, whether it was sending someone to the moon or the civil rights movement or whatever it was. I think when we've done important things in this country, it's when people got involved in civic life. And over the past quarter century, we have gotten increasingly uninvolved. People have gotten very cynical. People have gotten very isolated from each other. And I loved that. And that was why I decided to run for city council, is that I want to bring that energy to the city level. I want people to realize that they can have a huge impact, each person, on what happens in the city. And at the same time, I want the city at the staff level, at the city council level, at every level, to be responsive to that. I want to make sure that the city listens to people, asks people, brings people into the process, not just residents, but business owners, people who come visit the city, you know, just kind of bring that all in. I'd like to see people more involved in doing things for the city and in volunteering and in getting involved with their bodies as well as their minds and their mouths. I'd like to see city council meetings, or in the short term, at least work sessions around the city in public schools and in community centers. And I'd like to see us have pizza and childcare so that people can come after work and it won't be a burden and people won't be unwilling to come. so that we can get a wider variety of voices that we're listening to as we make these decisions. The other piece, the kind of the flip side of this very same thing, is that we have a community in which about probably 80-85% of us, and I include myself in this, have a wonderful place to live. It's a terrific city. You know, we have some of the best music. We have the university. We have parks. We have, it's a beautiful area. The beach is not too far. The mountains are on the other side. It's lovely. And you know, a lot of very, for my purpose, very progressive government that does environmental things. And we have curbside recycling, you know, just all this wonderful stuff. And yet we have a far too large, small proportion of our community that isn't able to access the wonderful things that we have in this community. People who go to our wonderful world-class schools and either drop out or are not able to graduate. We have people who finish from our high school and can't get a job and have to leave. We have amazing pockets of poverty for such an affluent community, and it's persistent poverty. It's, you know, generational poverty. And I think that what I want to see us do in this community, I don't know if you've heard of the project in Harlem, the Children's Zone, where it was really one person kind of had this idea, and it has grown incredibly, Jeffrey Canada, where they looked at the whole community and they said, you know, our kids are not making it. Our kids aren't graduating from high school. They're not going to college. What can we do about this? And they set their entire community to figuring out how to make sure that their kids made it to their own, you know, level. To really, their goal was to have their children graduate from high school or from college at the same rate as other kids. And so they started early childhood development programs. They started parenting classes for everyone, not just for people who might be considered at-risk parents, but everybody could come. So it wasn't just a stigmatized thing. They had prenatal care that make sure that was available. They had, you know, lots of different things in the community. They did after-school programs. They ended up starting a charter school because there they couldn't get the schools to participate in working with kids during the school day. Because, you know, as we look at some of these issues, especially in the schools, I think we need to realize that when a child finishes high school, she's only spent 15% of her waking time in school, and the rest of her time has been spent in the community, at home or out in her neighborhood or in after school programs. And so the community needs to realize the impact that we have on our kids. And I don't think that we're a Harlem, and I don't think that we need to do what Harlem did, but I think that what we need to do is take that same process and say, what do we need to do to make sure that all of our kids have a chance to make it? And then, you know, figure out how we can come together as a community to make that happen.
Question number 15. Do we have appropriate resources in city government to achieve the objectives in the city's strategic plan? And a follow-up, in what way, if any, do we need to make changes, and what impact will your recommendations have on staffing and the annual budget?
Yes. No, yes. We have appropriate resources in city government to achieve the objectives of the strategic plan, but not enough. I think, you know, it's always that way, and I think that's how you can kind of tell you're in a good position, is if you have the basics, you have just enough, but you'd really like more. And I think that's where we are. I think that this is certainly about as hard a time as we're going to have. I think for the next few years, it's going to be really tight. And I think we're going to have to figure out ways that don't involve raising the budget significantly unless we try to find ways that lower it to compensate for those. I think there are a lot of things we can do that can be either revenue neutral or of such impact that it's worth an expenditure. But I think we need to be very careful about that. So, the changes that I'd like to make, I've been talking about all along, so I don't really see any massive, you know, I don't want to overhaul the budget my first year on City Council. I think I'll spend my first year really learning a lot, and I've started that over the past several months, reading all of these reports that sit on the shelf collecting dust and reading all the budget reports and the different analyses of tax structure and zoning plans, and I read the city code a couple of months ago. That was fun. And so, you know, that's I don't really have an answer yet, but I think that it's something that I want to be very careful about, and yet I don't want to be so afraid of spending money that when we have an opportunity to make a huge impact that we just don't spend the money. I think sometimes we can be penny wise and pound foolish, and when we have a chance to do something important, we need to do it.
Question number 16. What do you see as the primary responsibilities of City Council?
To serve as the people's voice and eyes in the running of the city. We're the people's watchdog. We're the people who are accountable to the voters. I think that's the big thing. I think we are, the reason it's an elected city council is so that we have accountability in our city government.
Great. Thank you very much.
Sure. Well, thank you.